Sunrose Yoga. Reveal and remember your sacred nature through the practice of yoga. The Sunrose Yoga Podcast is a collection of audio recordings, videos, and writings about the practices of yoga. The podcast's mission is to share the teachings of yoga in an accessible way and to foster meaningful discussion about the practices. To learn more or to experience past teachings, please visit sunroseyoga.com. The Sunrose Yoga Podcast is made possible by the generous donations of students and supporters. If you find this podcast useful or beneficial, please consider making a secure online donation by clicking the donate button at sunroseyoga.com. And thanks. Hello, and thank you so much for joining me for episode 100 of the Sunrose Yoga Podcast. This is Kelly Connor Sunrose, and I'm grateful and delighted to be here with you, and to be here with you for our 100th episode of the podcast. This practice brings me great joy, and I am so happy to be part of your practice. Today I have something slightly different planned for our time together, and I will be answering questions that I receive with some frequency from students and listeners and readers of the blog, and some other questions that I received from students in preparation for this episode. So thank you so much for being here, and please do get in touch. I love hearing from you, and I love practicing with you. You can get in touch by phone, by email, via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and by commenting on the blog. I would ask that if you do enjoy what you hear, you consider writing a review in iTunes. That helps bring people's attention to the podcast and helps share our work and our community, and it helps share the love of yoga. I'm also offering private sessions, mentoring, and yoga sessions to students. We can do this via FaceTime or Skype or via email or in person if you're local here in the Portland, Oregon metro area. And to learn more about that, you can go to sunroseyoga.com or email me at sunroseyoga@gmail.com. Many, many thanks to all of you who've been here from the beginning and for any length of time. Maybe this is your first time listening. I'm grateful for you and excited to share this interview with you. Jai. So one of the questions that I'm asked from time to time is how I got into podcasting. The answer to that, maybe surprisingly or unsurprisingly, goes back to when I was a little girl and I was really interested in a career or just making radio. And in my spare time, I would recruit my sisters and my neighbors into helping me produce this radio station, which we called KDC Radio, which was my initials. And it was like a real passion of mine, and it still is. I enjoy listening to radio. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there's something really about this medium that is universal in that it's accessible to a lot of people. And it's also deeply personal. Like when you're listening, especially for me, when I'm listening to a podcast, it's as though the person podcasting is speaking right to me. And there's something really wonderful and powerful about that. And to some extent, so much of my learning happens through podcasts. I listened to some, over the past 10 years, really since podcasting started. I've gone through phases of really being deeply immersed in podcasts, and that's shifted over time. And there's usually one or two that I'm really into and listening to all the time, and sometimes gorging on them. And right now, what I really love is the unedited cut of On Being, which is an American public media show produced and created by Krista Tippett. And it's a really wonderful show, and I enjoy listening to the unedited version because it's sort of like a really stretched out conversation. And you get to hear people just talking about their work and what matters to them, and that's important. And another one that I really like right now is to listen to the Dharma talks published by the Center of Gravity. Those are usually talks given by Michael Stone. And so much of my learning has happened in this way. Like over the years, this transmission of wisdom has happened this way. I used to listen to a podcast that Lara Hedin put out. It was called Yoga Peeps. And I have found so many of my teachers in listening to the interviews on that podcast. And in some small way, I feel like, giving back to people by putting something out there that is, using the same medium. And my hope is actually to evolve the podcast from its current format, which is primarily classes and meditations. I'm hoping to evolve it into more interview type episodes. So stay tuned for that. Along the podcasting lines, I also a volunteer at a community radio station here in Portland. I do news writing and news headlines, reading and producing on the radio, and I just love it. So I get to do what I love all over the place. So that's podcasting. And so then something else that I'm asked with some amount of frequency is sort of like why I practice yoga. And I think, like a lot of people who are not as enmeshed in the practice, if I can say that, enmeshed, if that means that's a neutral way of saying something. To the outside, a lot of the time we think of yoga as like calisthenics, and that's maybe the only thing we know of yoga is something physical for the body. And for me, it certainly began. I mean, my entry point was through asana, a challenging, rigorous asana practice. But even when I stepped into the practice, I knew that there was more to it. And something that I've been working with for the past number of years is sort of like reconciling this idea that, like we have a body. Like I am having a human experience in a body, but I know that my experience can't be reduced to my body and to my physical experience. So it's something that I can't deny. But it's also not the entire picture. And sort of like working with asana in a way that respects that. So, there were some times when my practice was very much about the body, and almost to the point of being a bit obsessive about getting it right. And there have been times when the pendulum has sort of swung the completely opposite direction, where I really wasn't doing much asana at all, and I was really sort of like, you know, just really out there with my meditation practice. And that's also a really, you know, wonderful place to be in and instructive. But things have a way of sort of settling and sorting themselves out, whether we have a plan for what that means or not. So I practice. The original question here was, why do I practice? And I practice because I think that the practice itself, in all of its forms, makes me a kinder and more compassionate person. And I don't, when I say that, I don't mean that like doing handstands or doing, you know, these architecturally complicated shapes makes me a better person. I think that asana gives opportunities in sort of controlled environments to play and to experiment with how we manage challenging and less challenging times. And so that when we encounter them out in the world, we can do so with grace. And we can do so fully and completely and beautifully. So that's why I practice. And I feel different. I feel different from having practiced. I feel happier, in a sense. And that's, you know, challenging to unpack too, because I don't mean like happier, like la la la, I'm not aware of suffering in the world. Because I think at a certain point, like what the practice does, it informs you that all of the stuff around you that seems irritating or infuriating is caused by suffering. But the awareness of that, and help the assistance in locating contentment wherever it's available, like that's resulted in happiness. So that's why I practice. Something else that I'm asked quite frequently, since more and more I work with teachers and more I do mentoring of teachers and sort of like helping them step into their home practice and step into their teaching practice. One of the questions that I get asked from time to time is how I knew it was time to begin teaching. And it's a really interesting question because, especially where I live, there are a lot of teachers. There are a lot of people who've done a yoga teacher training. And, a lot of people who practice yoga. And these are beautiful things. And there's great responsibility in teaching yoga. There's great responsibility in holding space for people to, you know, be with the practices and, to be there with them while they do their growing. And how did I know it was time? I didn't. I don't know if we do. I don't know if you ever know, like, the time is right. I this year have been practicing yoga for 17 years, and I've been teaching for 8. So I started teaching after I had been practicing, with consistency for 9 years. And of course, at the time, I felt like I wasn't ready. And my teachers urged me to just go for it. So I don't know. It's a really tough question. I mean, I think things that are important to think about when you're teaching is like whether you can step out of the way. And so that when you're teaching, it's not about you. It's about the students, and it's about, letting the practice come through. And, always being there with your students, but reminding them also that they're doing the work, and that it's the teaching and it's the practice that is key, is of paramount importance. Because as we've all seen, there's in moments of vulnerability, when you're really like out there on the edge of things with your own learning and your own experience, there's potential for people are vulnerable and they can attribute certain things to a teacher. And if you're not like really grounded in your own practice, I've seen people sort of like get high on that, and that's not the yoga. That's something, but it's not the yoga. So that involves it's skillful teaching and skillful studentship in order for that to work. I didn't really answer that question very well, did I? I don't know how I knew it was the right time to step into teaching. There is something that happens, like even when when you begin teaching, I think, like your practice is always evolving and your teaching is always evolving, and letting that unfold takes some work. And realizing that things are gonna, they're gonna continue to shake out and settle. Something that I'm remembering when I became a teacher is like how unbalanced my life was. I was working as an attorney and I had this extremely stressful job. And I was the person in every yoga class who inevitably fell asleep and snored in Shavasana. I was just at the edge of exhaustion. And somehow, like, I knew that, like, taking my practice to a more intense place would create some healing. So I knew that on some innate level. And so as that's unfolded, like that's something that's become clear to me over the years, is like just how much we actually teach and practice what we need to learn. And I've always let that be my guide in my teaching. If something is interesting to me, I follow it and then I share it. Oh, and so another question I'm often asked by teachers is, what are the greatest challenges of teaching yoga? And so, like I was saying, I think like the first few years, you're still sort of the first. I'm only speaking from now, having 8 years experience. So perhaps I'll look back 10 years from now and think, oh, what a young pup I was when I said that. And I'm sure that's true. But at least the first couple of years, you're finding your own voice, and that's challenging. You're integrating your teachings, like the things you've been taught, into your own practice and then sharing that. And, that just takes time and you can't rush it. Like Phil Collins saying, like, you can't hurry love, you just have to wait. That's something else I do a lot in class, is I sing 80s songs. I inherited that from my mom. So another thing that is challenging is like even if you have been practicing for a long time, you know, for like a decade or more, which isn't really a long time, but you know, you've got some time and you're confident in what you're practicing. Like, it takes time to be confident in sharing that, to be confident in knowing that you can't control what people are going to hear and how they're going to assimilate what you've said. Like, you could teach, you know, like a class to you that's perfect, and because of something that happened before someone came in, you know, they heard something completely different from what you intended, and you have no control over that. And being confident in spite of that, and maybe because of that, takes time. It's also challenging at times to sort of like find the balance, to find the right amount of teaching. And I don't mean just like from a practical level, like getting the jobs. I mean, like, for yourself, figuring out how much you can teach and still like really feel juicy in your practice. And then also, like, the opposite is true. If you're teaching really infrequently, it can almost feel like you're relearning your craft every time that you step into the classroom. So that can be challenging. And you know, I feel like once you've been doing it for a while, you know, it's sort of like parenting. Like, you're constantly modulating, you're constantly sort of like relocating the baseline and figuring what works around that. Which is kind of fun, you know, once you let yourself have fun with it. Something that comes up, this actually comes up a lot in my real life classes, my real life, my in-person classes. People, from time to time will ask me what style of yoga I teach. You know, my classes are often labeled a certain way, and you know, with that, with any teacher that you have, you know, they bring their own practice to their teaching. And so, you know, even the most vinyasa of vinyasa classes taught by two different teachers, they'll be different, as long as those teachers are teaching from their own practice. And really, like, now for most of my classes, I feel like I'm just teaching yoga. I feel like I'm just teaching whole yoga. I'm teaching the postures from, you know, this the point of view or the premise that you're already all right. And when we start from there, like, that frees up so much space. When you take out of the equation this sort of self-talk of you're doing it wrong or you need to be doing it better or something like that, it really frees up space. And that sometimes even you can feel physical space in the body. And you know, that's not to say I don't teach alignment. I do. And you know, like, it's helpful for students to know that, you know, if they're doing something that is potentially injurious, like, you're going to say so. So, I mean, I obviously have that sensibility to my work, but you know, I like to think of the physical practice as an embodied metaphor. That's how I've been thinking about it for the past year or so. Like, it's an embodied metaphor for the greater practice of yoga. The body gives us a place to experiment in different ways. And the more comfortable we become with the practices, the more likely we are to use them out in the world, I think, for me. So we talk in my classes a lot about philosophy, and we practice a fair number of non-pose yoga, like pranayama, practice mudras, we practice bandhas and mantra and meditation, and we sing a lot. And to me, it's just whole yoga. So that's how I would describe it. And oh, so another question I got was, what books am I reading right now? And I'm a lover of books, and I'm known to have a big stack of books next to my bed, and I sort of rotate back and forth. Like sometimes I, need something a little lighter before bed. And sometimes, like right now I've been carrying around a couple of books with me and just digging into them whenever I have the opportunity. And I'm deeply in love with Matthew Remsky's remix of the Yoga Sutras that he calls Threads of Yoga. It's really delightful. It's poetic and postmodern, and really you read his practice. It's a very true rendering of the sutras, and not that it's like super faithful to the original text, because it's not. I'm also really into this book by Richard Rosen called Original Yoga, and it sort of breaks down the Garanda Samhita and the Shiva Samhita and the Hatha Yoga Pratipika. And it's just really fun to read. It's fascinating and it's fun, and it's nice. I love, he sort of geeks out on some things, and I love reading when you can tell someone else is extremely passionate about what they're doing. I just adore that. So that's a really wonderful book. I love this book by Twyla Tharp called Creative Habit, and I'm rereading it. She has all these wonderful exercises and questions about thinking about your life as a creator. And it's wonderful, like thinking about process. Process is really important to me and helpful for me. And thinking about process and making time for thinking about process is something that she encourages. So I really enjoy that one. And something that has been sitting, a book that's been beside my bed for the last 2 years that I'm still working on, is Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. And it's really challenging to read, and I have to have my phone with me, because there are just so many like stories behind. Like some of the words he uses are so dense, and not to mention that he made a lot of words up in writing the book. So you can't, like when I first began reading, I tried to just have a dictionary next to me, and because a lot of the words are not recognized words, that did not work. And that book is so wonderful in telling about the human condition and about suffering and about love and vulnerability and about peace. And it's a joy to read, but it's also very challenging. So I recommend it. I love it. I love all of those. I mean, and so much more, so many other books, but those are the four that I'm working with right now. And oh, so something else that I'm asked by students a lot is sort of like how with having a young child, I make time for practice. And I get up really early. I get up at 5 and I sit. I meditate and I have a little, space. And that's sort of where it begins. That sets the tone. And I try to take one public class from another teacher every week. And that's nice. It's nice to, I have my home practice and I fit that in ordinarily in the afternoon sometime. Just depending on the day and where I am with my daughter. But then I also try to take one public class a week. And I'm pretty loose about it, you know, like I'm not going to have a young child forever. And she goes to preschool, so I really try when we're together to be with her completely. And the best way for me to do that is to get up at 5 and do my practice then. Yeah. 5 a.m. is a really magical time. So one of the questions that I always loved listening to the answers to on Lara Hadid's show Yoga Peeps was she would end an interview by asking, if you had a huge audience, like a World Cup stadium, soccer stadium, football stadium size audience, what would you teach them? And I would just tell people that there is always space. Like there's always room. Like everyone has space for one breath. And okay, so some other people have been asking me, like, what's next? Like, where am I going? And I have a couple of new classes that I'm working on for my local students. And in addition to my present roster, I'll be offering Friday morning meditation at 7 a.m. at the People's Yoga Southeast. I'm also working on bringing chair yoga for elders, for seniors, for wise yogis, also with the People's Yoga. I have a couple other things sort of like in earlier phases. And I've also been working on an online meditation course, so stay tuned for that. And I'm also deepening my mediation practice. I know I haven't talked much about that, but I'm becoming a mediator and using yoga and mediation together. Yoga, meditation, and mediation. And I have sort of, I don't know if it's really a secret, but I've been working on a book for the past year and a half, and it's almost done. And so I'm hoping to be able to talk to you more about that in coming months. But I'm really, really excited about it. So I think that that's where we'll end for today. I'm really grateful that you are all here and share this new format, this new conversation with me. And I'm grateful for our time together over the past 4 years and 5 years, holy cow, and 100 episodes. So please stay in touch. Like I said, I'm doing more mentoring and deeper study type work with students via FaceTime, Skype, and in person. Stay in touch with the podcast. Keep listening. And locally, if you're in Portland and we haven't met, pop on into a class. I'd love to give you a hug in real life. So thanks, everybody. May you have peace in your heart on your path until we meet again. And always, Sadhguru Nat Maharaj Ki Jai.